The whole house vibrated. Again, pictures fell off the walls. Meanwhile, Phil's wife and young children, seized with terror, had followed the men upstairs. Ted insisted that Phil get his family out of the house. Phil hated to leave his brother in such an appalling situation. But that night, he had no choice. "There's nothing natural about this," Phil finally admitted at the front door. "You better go find another priest who will listen to you." That Sunday night, the reign of terror continued. Yet beyond that, it seemed as though everyone in the house had gone haywire. "I'm going to kill you," Patty screamed at her brother. "Yeah, I'll kill you first," Brian snarled back. "I'm going to kill both of you," Ellen shouted at the two of them. In the midst of the fighting and arguing, the percussive pounding went on unabated. Now Ted Donovan, his mind a swirl, his house a wreck, broke down. With clear tears glistening in his eyes, he commanded everyone to stop. When Brian saw his father, he broke down in tears, as did Ellen. Patty, the original source of the trouble, however, was indifferent and unaffected. She locked herself in her bedroom until morning. On more than one occasion in my life, I've had to deal with people who didn't understand why Jesus said, "If any man hate not father, mother, wife, children, brother, sister, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple." Another one of those strong words that gets watered down in modern theology. Now, it isn't a direct hate. Matthew puts it in terms of preference. And when his own family would lay hands on him possessively, he said, "These who do the will of the Father are my father, mother, my relatives." I had an aunt once I knew was full of the devil. She used to love to say, "Blood's thicker than water." You got to understand the danger. Now, I'm not suggesting they get rid of Patty. Poor Patty's going to need some help later on. I keep asking myself, why didn't Patty say something about her Ouija board experience? Why didn't she talk to her parents about it suddenly stopping? Satan's tactic is to get to you. If he can't get to you direct, he'll try to get to the people who have the hooks of emotional attachment into you. Or he'll try to get to people in your scenario. My problem has always been, though I learned years ago, you don't go hundreds of miles into northern Luzon where the headhunters, witch doctors rule. You don't wander around the back country of India. You don't go to spiritist services, not the tourist ones, but the Rio McCoy in Brazil. You don't knock around in the jungles where Satan has ruled supreme for years without knowing how to battle the devil. My problem has always been forming associations with people who don't. And if you're leaning on that crutch, you go down with it. It's a tough choice, you know. There's a little clue right here when the dad in desperation tries to stop the whole family going haywire under pressure. One person was indifferent. Should have figured something out. The next day, Ted Donovan was drawn and pale. You want me to continue?
Yes, sir.
I mean, you know, it's past my bedtime. Past your bedtime.
Okay.
It's okay?
Okay.
He had already used up all his sick days babysitting the pandemonium. Something had to be done, yet who could he turn to? Repairmen couldn't help. Neither could the police. The church had shortchanged him. Told him to see a psychiatrist. Even his own brother. As Ted stood at the kitchen window, he found himself staring at the large cross atop the monastery retreat house that bordered his property. Now we got another clue. Monastery retreat house in Trumbull, Connecticut. You know, I've always wanted to start a research school that's a little different than others. Bring in a student to go check this out. That's field trip, we called it in college. I'm warning you.
No, sir.
Hope suddenly flooded into Ted's heart. The monks would know what to do. Ted waited until after the breakfast hour, then walked up the road to the retreat house, where a kindly middle-aged monk ushered him into the foyer. Ted quickly did his best to explain the problem. To make a long story short, and gain the time we lost while I lighted my pipe, the priest said, "Sometimes these things are caused by spirits. Do you believe in such things, Ted?" "These days, Father," Ted said, "I'm open to suggestions." "Very well, then," resumed the monk. "This kind of spirit which delights in tormenting people is not a ghost, but a spirit of special order. We know almost nothing about them except they are truly mean spirits. I myself," this monk said, "cannot challenge the type of spirit that appears to have entered your home, though there are other priests who can." The Catholics got more sense than some of my Pentecostal brethren. I mean, they send saint after saint out with slingshots to take on leopards, tigers, and elephants. "But be reminded," the monk stressed, "there are other mysteries in the world. The mysteries of science unfold before our eyes every day. Not every strange question has a strange answer. The mind plays tricks on us. Nature plays tricks on us." Now this is, he's covering himself. "Before the church will assign clergy to a case such as yours, the matter must first be proved. Genuinely spiritual in nature. What is your opinion?" "I think you might possibly have hit upon the matter, Father. I'd like to pursue it," Ted concluded. "Then let me give you the name of someone who may be able to help you sort this thing out." Do you understand the Catholic position here? Got to be proven genuinely spiritual before they'll authorize a priest to go kick the asteroid of that demon. And the spirit's tearing their house up. Well, they got to go through some red tape first. I'm not sure I like that Catholic doctrine. I mean, is there a way to put expedite on it? Ed Warren's name comes up. This is the second time someone had referred Ted Donovan to the Warrens. When the two men walked back to the retreat house, the monk made a phone call, got Ed and Lorraine's telephone number. You better get in touch with these people as soon as possible. That's precisely what I'm going to do, Ted assured him. At work later that morning, Ted telephoned the Warrens and spoke with Judy Penny, a young woman who works as a liaison when Ed and Lorraine are out of town. Judy, the Ghostbuster, is out of town. Judy has heard, better move fast, going to leave Dallas if I don't get going. They're going to hate me. Judy has heard some hair-raising tales over the phone, but this one particularly scared her. The Warrens are out west, she told Ted Donovan, but I'll relay the message to them. I suggest you call back Saturday, by then they'll have returned home. Saturday was 5 long days away. It was Holy Week, the most notorious time of the year for demoniacal activity. I agree with that. The next morning at daybreak, the Donovans awoke to the sound of objects pelting the roof. Going out to investigate, they once again saw stones falling under their house out of thin air. All week long, stones began falling on the Donovan house at dawn and stopped at dusk. The number and velocity varied. Some fell slowly, as though sinking through water. Others came down in erratic zigzags. Every so often, there'd be a violent deluge of rocks and stones, some falling hard enough to embed themselves in the roof. When they hit the ground, about half the stones would vanish. The others remained for the family to clean up later. Told you I just said. I can't read this. It's too unbelievable. Got to stop reading. Can't stop either. Inside the house, the anti-religious activity had become as violent as the stones falling outside. Crucifixes were turned upside down. Pictures of saints were torn up. The minute threads left defiantly in a pile. The statue of St. Anne, which the Donovans now kept in the living room, was constantly being hidden, as though something could not bear to see it. Indeed, the anti-religious activity reached a ridiculous extreme. One night, the Donovans heard a tremendous commotion in Brian's bedroom. When it died down, they went in to find one of the twin beds torn apart. The mattress was under the bed frame. The box spring, however, was propped up against the wall, covering a framed picture of Jesus. On another occasion, while sitting in the living room, the Donovans heard a hellish, woeful moan resonate out of the kitchen. Ever so cautiously, Ted walked down the hallway. Sitting in the middle of the kitchen floor was On another occasion, while sitting in the living room, the Donovans heard a hellish, woeful moan resonate out of the kitchen. Ever so cautiously, Ted walked down the hallway. Sitting in the middle of the kitchen floor was their big, double-doored refrigerator. It had been moved away from the wall, the exact limit of its power cord. The next night, they heard the same lingering moan. Again, the refrigerator was found sitting in the center of the room. Perhaps even more intimidating was the observation that even physical matter presented no obstacle to the oppressing entities. Ted had the only key to the deep freezer located in the basement. Incredibly, when he opened the freezer one afternoon to take out provisions, he found inside the big iron blacksmith's anvil he kept in the garage. Later, Ted also discovered that his huge steel toolbox had mysteriously been teleported to the attic. Worst of all, there now seemed to be a physical presence in the house. When alone, members of the family had the unshakable feeling that someone was in the room staring at them from behind. The terror was enhanced by footsteps, the rustle of clothes, heavy breathing. Once, when Ellen Donovan quickly turned around, she saw... There ain't no way I'm going to be able to finish this. Once, when Ellen Donovan quickly turned around, she saw a black form standing in the room behind her. For the Donovans that year, Good Friday, April 12th, was a day of abject fear. A forbidding atmosphere enveloped the house. Indeed, it seemed as though the whole place might suddenly explode as the berserk rampage continued unabated. Stones mysteriously pummeled the house outside while unrestricted bedlam went on within, all of which was now compounded by an evil presence so increasingly real and physical that no one dared be alone in the house for even one moment. The Donovans, frightened and tormented, now had only one hope left. The Warrens, whoever they were. April 12th. Inside LaGuardia Airport Terminal, enough people to fill a small town milled around waiting for planes. Outside. We're going to leave Dallas in a few minutes. No way I can finish the chapter that comes up, which is entitled Deliverance. These people are going to be delivered. Now, this is an unbelievable story. It gets worse. There's pictures here. I'm showing you the pictures tonight. I've shown them to you another night. I'll show you those some other time. Let me show the pictures again. That's the iron pipe. The new one that's installed takes place of the one that was bent. The bureau drawers and upper left. The bureau drawers in Ted and Ellen Donovan's bedroom would open and slam shut of their own accord. More than once, when their son Brian slept on the floor in a sleeping bag, the drawers would become active and slam him in the head. Next picture. The day begins each morning. When the Donovans woke up, the bathroom would be torn apart and the towels were often found stuffed in the toilet. Part of the demonic strategy is to ruin objects of particular value to the victim. As soon as Ed Warren complimented the Donovans on their carnival glass fruit bowl, it levitated into the air, then crashed to the floor. Part of the normal disarray. Freshly made beds have been partly torn apart. Later each day, these bed linens would rise to the ceiling, then fall back in a heap on the bed. Remember, when we come to deliverance, Ed and Lorraine Warren are going to be in the house while these things are going on and take these pictures. The spirit Patty Donovan contacted on the Ouija board left mementos on her bed every day. Patty's bed. Here it has teleported a door, removed a pocketbook from storage, and dumped garbage from the kitchen, bathroom, and laundry room on her bed. You want to see some more? You say fake photography? Well, we'll see. See that chair on top of that refrigerator? That's Ed Warren there. Ed Warren inspects the refrigerator, which has spontaneously been levitated away from the wall at a 90-degree angle. The kitchen chair arrived atop the appliance courtesy of the same mysterious force. This was the second time the refrigerator had been moved. Each time a deep, baleful moan was heard just before the movement took place. Preternatural entities can manipulate the physical environment to terrorize their victims. Here the kitchen table tips over as the Warrens watch. Remember that couple, 55 years old, on a clear day in that ship that sat down to anniversary dinner on their cruise, and it tilted 45 degrees. Now, one of the questions we're asking about the Bermuda Triangle, are there preternatural forces working? Could that be the deep? In the basement, upper right, Peter, in the basement, a bottle of Coca-Cola is levitated. Zoom in on it. Oh, it's got a spring around it. Got to be fake. There ain't no spring in the picture. Throughout the house, bottles would rise into the air. Their caps unscrewed by themselves and the contents would spill. The hi-fi amplifier at left, zoom in on it. was part of the second sound system to be destroyed by the infesting entities. Now, I want to tell you something. Well, let's keep going. When this picture was taken, the recreation room sofa cushions had just been dematerialized, or that's the best explanation, they disappeared. A few hours later, they were found in the closet. I told you this is unbelievable. Every bone in my body says this can't be true. Furniture levitating during a demonic rampage in the basement recreation room. The Warrens took a picture of it. Try to zoom in, you can see those, that bar stool and other things just levitating in the air. Go up to the upper right here. In Lorraine Warren's presence, she saw those pins that are by the hinges just suddenly lift off, and then Brian Donovan's bedroom doors disappeared, dematerialized. They were later found on the cellar stairs, as photographed here. These dematerializations would happen in absolute silence. Physical objects would simply be there 1 minute, gone the next. Here the shoes on the floor had been in storage and for some strange reason were placed in this ostensibly walking position. I tell you, I can't read this book because I'm going to lose my reputation for credibility. This couldn't be true. I tell you, this is the sixth time I've read it. The recreation room lamp being levitated. I mean, Carl Lewis wouldn't have a prayer in a race against me if I were in that room. Ten minutes before, the room had been in perfect order. Note the plastic garbage can levitating. Can you get that, Peter? Upside down over a pile of furniture. When this photograph was taken, pandemonium was occurring throughout the house. You know why people didn't believe the message of the resurrection of Jesus Christ? When people told it, just about everybody had the same state of mind that people have that are listening to this story tonight. The first time the Warrens visited the Donovan home, Ed inspected the damage done to the basement recreation room. When he climbed back upstairs to the first floor, these bottles of bleach and detergent floated along behind him. The caps were removed by unseen hands and their contents spilled onto the cellar stairs. Just no way. This is just, this story is just too unbelievable. Yet an unseen force that could wrestle over the body of Moses, anticipate carrying it around, could pick up a Coke bottle. And an angel turned bad, which is what most of these demons are. An angel turned bad that was cast out with Satan has some of the same abilities that that good angel had that killed 180,000 Sennacherib's troops in one night. Philip was on the Gaza Strip. The only place that the church world can look for the word rapture is in the book of Acts, where it says that Philip was raptured. Now, that was done by good forces. Raptured. You don't believe in this dematerialization business. Well, what happened to Philip? He was down on the road to the Gaza Strip. Hey, all I'm saying to people is, if you're going to be a Christian, be one. You know, I teach you to be scholarly and intelligent when you read the Bible. No prophecy of Scripture is a private interpretation. But you're not just taking something out of context for this. This is the writer, Luke, of the book of Acts expected you to believe this. Philip was on the Gaza Strip. He had baptized the Ethiopian eunuch. And he was raptured, it says, caught away from the Gaza Strip, just disappeared there and appeared instantly in Jerusalem. And as I said earlier, that poor guy, that son of a prophet, was chopping wood and the axe head flew in the water, the river. Alas, Elisha came by and levitated it. Axe head came up. That's what it says. Enoch walked and talked with God and was not, for God took him. Now, we leaving somebody else? Every bone in my body says this didn't happen. But what I know about Scripture tells me it can happen. Ezekiel. He was caught up, transported. Deposited where the lost tribes were and sat there 7 days, astonished. I'm boring you. We leaving somebody now? Huh? Who'd we leave? Augusta? That's the way it is. Bye. April 12th, inside LaGuardia Airport Terminal. Oh, let's just do it tomorrow night. Let's see what they have to say. I want to know. Do I build up tension?